This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today, I'm talking to Dennis James Sweeney. He's written a book called How to Submit. Now, you need the subtitle, Getting Your Writing Published with Literary Magazines and Small Presses. How are you, Dennis? It's really good to have you.
So nice to be here, David. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to talk to you about the title because Left to Its Own Devices, How to Submit sounds like a BDSM book. And
yeah, I definitely got that comment from a few people. And I was like, it's really true. We got to have an image of paper and books on the cover. Like, yeah.
Yeah, no, you need the subtitle. But it is also, yep. I'm going to jump to something that you said in the book that I thought was really important and that you addressed the kind of psychological, almost spiritual element of what it means to submit one's work. You know, people don't think about that very much. You know, the idea of submission in this context is, you know, it's something about it that is really difficult for people to grapple with in a conscious way. And I think sometimes writers thinking about sending out their work to be published or figuring out how do I get published and how does this work? They think about it mechanically. And, you know, you address all of the mechanics. You know, that's what the book is about. But I think what's important is for anyone, whether it's writers or artists, musicians, anyone who's engaged in artistic activity, self-creation, the minute you engage with the outside world, you have to grapple with the meaning of what you're doing. And besides the creative, you know, just making it, like, what does it mean to participate in this system of distribution? And you're engaging with other people's ideas, the other people's structures. You know, if you want to, as you mentioned, you know, it's very possible to nowadays, and I think a lot of people do this, you know, just bypass the whole publishing world and do your own thing. You know, and there are many, as you know, many poets who publish on Instagram, you know, and then later do books. And, you know, you don't have to be part of whatever the system is, you know, however you want to define it now. And of course, this was true. You know, I started long ago. You could always self-publish. You know, a lot of really good poets, a lot of really good writers publish their own books. You know, Melville being one of the famous ones.
Totally.
But I think it's really important to, you know, people seek the validation of the in the case of poetry and fiction, you're seeking the validation of the literary community.
Absolutely.
And you talk a lot about finding your community. I think that's, you know, today in our fragmented world, difficult.
Yeah, I feel like I think about it as being part of a conversation. You know, it's getting validation from that community, as you said, but also entering a conversation where you're not the only voice out there, right? You're not just, don't feel like you're just throwing your voice out into the world, but there's like a million possible people who could hear it, but no people who may actually hear it, right? Because there's not a community that's sort of organized around those things. And I think the thing that's been so magic to me about like the small press world and the literary magazines that I've been discussing is how there's sort of these pre-existing communities of people who are interested in the same aesthetic stuff and interested in reading things that are related. And so when you add your voice to that, suddenly it's a conversation that's already taking place and you're just like jumping into it a little bit. But I love how you asked that around the idea of the title too, because how to submit is like something I had to really figure out how to relate to as a way of talking about submitting and sharing your writing, because it can be this thing, you know, aside from the possible BDSM associations, which we clear up with the subtitle, right? It also has the kind of valence of being a way of describing a power relationship. Like it's easy to feel like submitting is like this warlike thing where there's like somebody high up who's, you know, either gonna, you know, they're gonna pronounce on your fate, right? Because they have so much power. It's really easy to feel like that when you're submitting your writing to this like invisible gatekeeper. But as you said, there's this underlying, you know, almost spiritual dimension, definitely community-based dimension of it, that you can think of it instead as like an offering. It was one of my students in one of my classes that brought up that definition of it. I was like, oh, thank you for giving that definition, because it's like so much better way to think about it. It's like, well, I'm going to give this to the universe and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, there's a, like, the humility is the word that comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
And I think often what you run across are people who, and I think you're addressing this to people who are trying to figure out, how do you do this? And I think, you know, you'll have many people at different levels and different ideas and different kind of sensibilities will be thinking about how do they grapple with this world of publishing. You know, the smaller publishers and literary magazines are easier to engage with, but of course they all have their own aesthetics, their own rules, their own ideas. So you're still, no matter who you are, how you're doing it, you're engaging with someone else's territory. And as you said, you know, you're joining a community. You don't just, you know, I often think that, I think the metaphor is like walking into a party. The party is ongoing. Everyone's in there. And you don't know anybody there. You just walked in, got invited to this party. What do? The first thing you don't do is start beating on your chest saying, I'm here. You know, listen to me.
Might be fun.
Most people would do that. You sort of try to find people that look like they are your people, and then see if you can find a way of engaging in the conversation. But first, you have to listen. You don't just start talking. You listen first.
That's a beautiful metaphor. I love that.
It really goes to the idea that I always felt this when I had edited a literary magazine, and I would get submissions from people that had obviously never read my magazine. Mm-hmm. They had no clue. And so the first lesson from my perspective is read, listen. You know, you're listen to the voices that you are trying to engage in, the community that you're trying to join. Well, you better find out, what do they do? You know, like, do they publish poetry, or are they interested in science fiction? You know, and it's the same as when you approach a book publisher. Publishers have aesthetics, but they also have turf. You know, I don't publish mysteries. Don't send me a mystery. You know, like, it's a waste of your time. And then you're really going to irritate the publisher, who will probably never talk to you again, because even if you have something that they're interested in, you've already started the conversation in a really bad way.
Right, on the wrong foot. I love that metaphor that you use, because the idea of a threshold to get into the room is this thing that I think people really obsess about and have a lot of anxiety about, right? Like, the second you walk into that room is going to be the moment when you have to really show up to the situation. You have to, like, that's when you're sharing your writing with the world. You know, this is why we call it gatekeepers a lot of times when we're talking about editors and things like that. And in a way, I think you're absolutely right about having, you know, people got to listen when they walk into that room. But in a way, what I want to introduce is the idea that you're always already in the room. You know, you're walking down the street, you're in the room. When you're going up the stairs to the apartment, you're in the room. You know, like, in a way, you were born in the room, or at least maybe the first book you read, you're already in the room, right? And so we're all already engaged in these conversations that are taking place, and we've been listening our whole lives, and listening and reading have been the things that formulated our taste and made us want to be writers, probably. But then to just key in on that and realize that that's already been happening, we're already in the conversation. And then, of course, like you said, to engage in an act of listening by, like, directing our attention more in terms of what we read, like starting to read from the places that we want to submit to and things like that. But just to know that that threshold isn't so definite, it's actually like a really long hallway or like a long journey, right? Instead of a moment of entering and suddenly having to, like, perform or show up. And part of my goal is to, like, take away the anxiety of that feeling of, like, walking in and then, like, I lost my breath, you know, I can't deal with it.
Right. No, I think that's actually really a good way of looking at it, which I hadn't thought of. And I like that idea that, you know, you're always there. Because, you know, that helps undermine the mechanical aspect of it. You know, this sort of, I mean, you address this in the book too, that, you know, you want to kind of keep track of what you're doing. You want to know who you're submitting to, and you know, there's sort of sometimes unspoken rules about this. You know, you don't bother people too much. You know, if you send them something, then you wait. You know, there's a certain amount of time you have to give them before you write them again and say, what happened to my, you know, my pathetic, you know, submission that I say, I don't mean to sound terrible, but I wrote you 10 months ago and I never heard anything back. And then, but that's when you also bring up this important point that most of the work that people are doing is volunteer. It's, you know, you publish a literary magazine or you publish books as a independent literary press. You're not making a lot of, this is not like a big job where you're getting paid the big bucks and you're just sitting there all the day, you know, drinking pina coladas and having fun.
Sounds great, you know, though, yeah.
People do this because of the, you know, you publish because you love the work. You know, I've always thought of editing and publishing as an extension of the literary work that you want to do as a writer. And for a lot of the people that are doing this, they are not only having jobs, families, their own writing, and then the literary publishing that they're doing. So it's really hard. And sometimes it's a group of people that have come together to create a magazine and they share the work. Sometimes it's just a solo practitioner, one person who's doing the whole thing. And so it's really helpful to, you know, make sure that writers who are sending out remember sometimes that the people they're talking to are busy. And it's hard.
That's the point, right? I think it's so easy to forget. You get wrapped up, like you said, in the mechanistic aspects of it, or even like the transactional aspects of it, right? Because everybody's trying to hustle. Everybody wants to make money or figure out a way to be recognized. And, you know, life can feel really transactional in this kind of era and moment of the world, at least where I live, you know? And I feel like it's really easy for all that to obscure the fact that it's actually human relationships that for most of us are the most sustaining thing. You know, the reason I write, if I really think about it, is I want to communicate. I want to connect with people. And that's editors and ultimately it's readers too. But realizing that instead of trying to achieve this thing that gets something nice for you on paper, or this idea of prestige or whatever, instead of being like a more transactional relationship, exactly as you said, it's people who are doing this and they're doing it because they love literature and they love other people and they want to connect, right? I think all of us are kind of, we have that longing. And I think for a lot of people who are interested in literary stuff, like the written word is kind of the medium through which we connect with other people. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself and saying that I'm speaking for everybody, but I think like using that medium of literature as a mode of human connection is for me the most beautiful thing. So if you can remember that suddenly you're submitting and instead of being like, I don't know, I hope they get back with a yes. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. I feel all this anxiety of the process. It's like, oh no, it's just, we're communing in this thing, you know, whether it's an acceptance or rejection, we're giving our labor to this shared project.
Yeah. And I think that word communing is really important. Thinking about often, you know, a lot of the literary activity of the last 75 years has been a communal experience that where groups of people came together because they had shared values or shared aesthetics, and they formed sometimes temporary relationships around the work and around their ideas. And it creates, that does create community. And literary, you know, sometimes they're called school, you know, the school of, you know, language poets or something like that. But really, it's not a school in the, even in that, that kind of formalizes it too much. I think the word community is better. And you see a lot of literary magazines start up just the way a rock band would.
Yeah.
You know, that three or four people got together because they wanted to make music together and they had the same ideas about what it should sound like. Mm-hmm. And that's true, I think, of a lot of literary magazines in particular. And sometimes they'll last, you know, 8 or 10 issues and sometimes 2 issues. Sometimes they'll go on, but it doesn't really matter. The whole idea is that they're a social activity. And so when you're a writer and you sort of feel isolated, I think, you know, because you might be the only person in Paducah, Kentucky, who you know is doing the kinds of things you're interested in. But now you can go online and you can find people much more readily than in the past who share your aesthetic. You know, you look around and find magazines that publish work that really appeals to you. And I think you refer to this, you know, you go find the people that resonate, and those are the places where you, and maybe sometimes it is just to contact them and say, I'll help, you know, I could do reading, I could read, write reviews, I could, you know, read your slush pile or whatever. It, you know, a lot of this is, it's not even always about submitting work to be published. Sometimes it's about engaging oneself in order to be part of a community so that you can feed each other and empower each other to in your own work, because it really is important to have validation. Like if I'm writing by myself and I never know who out there kind of does what I do or might be interested, I'm going to just sit here, you know, stewing in my own juices, basically.
Right. And you kind of need that community of people before it becomes really influential or reaches its readers or whatever. Like what you made me think of is how when you're talking about the schools, you know, whether it's New York school or even whether it's like Virginia Woolf's crew of people who are kind of all supporting like her writing or interested in that stuff, which I know less about, but it's also like relatively small community of people that eventually becomes incredibly canonical. And we sort of see the canonicity and we see the books on the shelves and even the contemporary books that are coming out today, we see they have all this reach and they seem so famous. And what you forget is that, like you said, it's a pretty small group of people who are really supporting that work and who are giving the author the spirit to kind of continue with it. And then it eventually has this outsized influence, but that influence is not the thing that ultimately like fed the work, right? It's sort of like
right. They never even thought of it at the time. I mean, you know, I think it's always great to think about Allen Ginsberg, William Burroughs, and those guys. I mean, they were mostly guys, unfortunately. But, you know, Columbia in the 1940s and early 50s, or Black Mountain College in the 40s and 50s, people, you know, accrued to the energy. And they, you know, but just, it was really just a few people, you know, who, like you were saying, it wasn't like they were influential at the time. It was some people who had shared aesthetics in a time and place. You know, it's a kind of milieu. And I think you can see that all over the world, not just in the famous cases, but there are many others. And as you you know, Paris in the 1920s, incredible, you know, creativity drawn together by circumstance. And why was it that Ernest Hemingway and Gertrude Stein were in the same place at the same time? You know?
Yeah. It's just like they were there. And I feel like the part of it is the stakes too, right? Like not thinking that it's going to be famous, not needing to necessarily make money off of it. And I'm not sure exactly what, especially like in Paris in the 20s, what people's relationship was to the financial side of it. But I think I'm also thinking a lot about small press and lit mag culture as like a relatively non-commoditized version of literature. And, you know, literature in general is like not a big money-making enterprise. So like there's versions of that throughout, you know, the practice of writing, the practice of publishing, like everybody's kind of doing it as this labor of love. But it feels like sometimes the lower the financial stakes are, the lower the need is to get famous, the higher the ability of people is to have those really interesting aesthetic relationships that bloom in really strange, unpredictable directions because they're not dependent on, you know, finding a pre-existing audience or something like that. And I feel like, yeah, these days, because of the internet and because of the way people are connected, instead of like geographically located people, it's like these communities of people that might be, you know, in the US scattered across the whole country, but they kind of cohere around specific publishing circumstances, you know? So it's like a small press or a specific group of like three or four small presses might like be the equivalent of a bunch of artists living in the same place, you know, 100 years ago or something.
Yeah. No, and I think you see parts of the country that have that energy that draw people together physically. So, you know, people go to Portland, Oregon.
For sure.
And you'll see there are a lot of small publishers and magazines in Portland.
Sure.
Minneapolis, St. Paul, which has been that way for a long time. I mean, New York is kind of the obvious one. And LA is really weird because it's so big and scattered. It's really a collection of neighborhoods. They mm-hmm. always, you know, you talk to people in LA and you could be a poet in, let's say, Venice. You would never see the poets in Long Beach. You just won't. You know, they're too far away.
It's barely the same place.
Yeah. Right. So, but I think there's the physical, the geographical draw. But then online, you don't have to worry about that at all and where you're located. And of course, you know, it was always true, like throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, literary magazines all over America would be getting submissions, you know, from all over America. But what was interesting then is that you wouldn't find the literary magazines in every, like you would not go to small towns and find those magazines. You would have to go to Milwaukee or Minneapolis or Chicago. And today, that impediment is gone. So I'm guessing that for this book, for you writing this book, your audience is much bigger in some ways because more people are doing this. And the trying to figure out where you send things and how do you find your kind of cohort out there. I mean, they're everywhere. You know, there's thousands of literary magazines and groups of people together, but that creates the same problem that we have now with an abundance of content and difficulty in finding the things that will interest you. The same thing is true. I don't know how to find all of the literary magazines that I might be interested in because, I mean, I know how to find them, but I'm never going to find them.
Yeah.
You know, mechanically, it's doable, but in terms of the time available to you, how do you do it?
Yeah, and if you try to seek out advice about it, I agree. In a lot of ways, this book is a response to the internet or the internet's way of interacting with the types of communities that we're talking about, because there are so many resources out there and there's so much access to all these different publishing projects. Plus there's the increased ability of people to create publishing projects through the internet and to, you know, publish through print on demand and stuff like that. So like you said, there's profusion and there's this abundance. And I think when that happens, you really want some level of like consolidated guidance. You know, we're still readers. We're still people who appreciate books. And when you're having this conversation, you know, it's really nice to have the huge breadth of resources, but I feel like it really helps to also have a consolidated voice, somebody who's thinking about this. And so I don't think of myself as like the end all be all, like the only person who has all the information about this, because it's kind of out there, but I kind of think about myself as one voice giving my opinion about how to potentially approach this that can give some level of calm and try to bring those resources together so it's not this incredibly like scattered experience. And then people can focus their energy a little bit better and how they spend it, and particularly focus their energy on doing it in a way that they enjoy and that makes them feel good and excited about their own writing. You know, it's so hard to feel that when you get on the internet and you just Google how to submit my writing, because then you're like, you'll spend 4 hours freaking out. You'll hate your writing, you know, you'll hate your life, and then you need like 2 weeks to recover, right? It's like, how do we approach this process in a way that's going to feel good and do the thing that we came to writing for in the first place, which is to feel inspired and feel like we're being alive in the world.
Right. Yeah, it's in a way which you're like a Sherpa, you know, almost like you're a guide and also a librarian in a certain sense. You're not advising people on which magazines or presses, but more on the process. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, librarians do that. They, you know, you go to a library, someone will actually help you.
Right.
You know, and
it's rare. It's so rare in this life.
I know. Well, we need navigators. And it is really, I think that is the biggest challenge. And of all, that is the sheer output of content, meaning that no one human being will ever be able to read it all or hear it all or even know what they're missing. And to me, it's sort of like a conundrum of our entire society, that because it creates fragmentation and it means that we are no longer coherent with each other. Mm-hmm. We don't have any, you know, there's almost nothing that you could guarantee that any 10 people that you talk to will have shared the same writing, music, art,
dance.
You know, we all will have different experiences. So how can we be a culture with a cohesion that allows us to be together.
It's really fascinating. Yeah, I never thought about that in terms of publishing context too, but like there is this sort of broadening or flattening that happens. Most people aren't aware of the people who are publishing the books they read, right? Which is totally fine. But you go into a bookstore and you're just like, I could be anything. You know, I remember having this experience when I was a kid, like I really want something that's going to move me. So I would just look on the shelves, find a title that seemed cool, then a book cover I liked, and I'd read it. And, you know, 75% of the time I would hate it. I'd be like, oh, this didn't work. And it's almost like small presses and literary magazines too, because of their aesthetics that they're pulling together, become those guides. So I guess I can, you know, act as a guide too in my book, How to Submit. But it feels like if you start to get familiar with publishers and get familiar with the specific aesthetics and tastes that people are using, then suddenly you do have some sort of node in that world. I think that's why I was so drawn to it personally. You know, I just love reading, but I felt like I floundered for so long. And then suddenly when I discovered like Essay Press or Tarpaulin Sky Press or Civil Coping Mechanisms or Sidebrow Books, you know, all these people that were really influential to me, I was like, I can just read a book that they publish. It's going to be so awesome, so weird, and it's going to be picked out just for me. And yeah, it's particularly rare to have that experience. Unless you go to a library with somebody who's really into the stuff that you're into, or happen to be just the right bookstore, clerk.
Or you get to live in just the right place. I was sort of thinking as you were saying that, I don't know why this made me think of it, but Athens, Georgia, where in the 90s, there was this music scene. Mm. And it was kind of accidental that a bunch of people got together and arrived in the right place at the right time. And, you know, how they must have felt. Just like, totally. I found my people, you know, and it's like you said, the node, I think, is a really good word for it. In this kind of fabric of society, you need to find your node or nodes and hang on to them, because they're kind of an anchor. You know, they give you a base to work from, and you can still go out and explore other things, but you know, it's sort of like you live on an island in the ocean and you have a canoe.
Yeah.
At least you're on an island, you know?
Yeah.
And there are other people there who you like. And
totally. It's like it's like if you read the same, yeah, sometimes I'll read these books and maybe 20 other people have read, or 100 other people have read, or maybe if I'm lucky, like 1,000. And when you meet one of the other people who read one of those books, you know, you're like, we're in the same community. We've had this really close experience in a way, even though we were in different rooms, reading it at different times, like we have this shared reference point, and it suddenly adds to your island, right? You get a little more sand on there. You can go a little farther.
Right. You don't feel so alone. I had that experience in a bookstore last summer. It was a science fiction bookstore. Mm. And I was looking at a book, and somebody who was also browsing said, oh, I know that book. Let me tell you, that's not the right book to start from with that author. You need to read this book instead.
Wow.
And it was that sort of idea that you're in a community of people who actually understand the things that you're interested in, and they know more than you do. Mm-hmm. So it's that accident of finding people that, like you were saying, you know, you would go to a library where they just happen to know your what your interests are. But yeah, I think it's really important to have that sense of community. And I hadn't thought that, you know, looking at this book, when you first look at it, it's not like, that's not the first thing you think of.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely seems like just a guide to like, here's how you do it. Here's how you write a cover letter, right?
Yeah, but I think it is really good to think of the whole engagement is about finding community and building your kind of literary relationship base.
Yeah. And how do we keep that in our hearts while we're doing it, right? Like the extent to which you can keep that in your mind and in your heart while you're doing it is the extent to which maybe you can be happy in this kind of really difficult literary life, right? It's so easy for there to be sort of a lot of doomsday feelings around it, and like nobody can make any money from this, and it's so difficult to figure out how to make this into a life, which is all true. And, you know, if we can figure out why we started doing it in the first place and stay connected to that, that is the underlying goal of the book that, like, you know, quietly blooms up through the spaces of the more logistical stuff, or maybe loudly blooms up from it, I guess, because it sounds like you're you're feeling that from the book,
yeah,
for sure.
No, I think maybe I'm biased, or, you know, my background kind of pushes me in that direction, but I think it's good to, you know, since you're being a guide for people who may need this help, that you're encouraging them to think more holistically than mechanically. So I think that gives it much more power, I think, you know, in terms of being helpful to people and altering how they view this thing that they're doing. So I think that's really good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and I hope it's better for our writing too. You know, if we're engaging with our publication circumstances this way, like, I hope that it can also mean that our writing is going to feel more alive because it's entering that conversation with consciousness and intention. You know, for me, it's so enlivening to be like, oh wow, this is a book that I could publish with this press, or that's part of this conversation, and it pulls me forward. You know, makes me do stuff that I wouldn't otherwise do, and, you know, kind of push the boundaries. So hoping, yeah, it can help us all be writers too, you know, and find the stuff we really need to make.
That's great. Well, I really want to thank you, Dennis, for doing this, and wish you luck with the book. It's called How to Submit, Getting Your Writing Published with Literary Magazines and Small Presses. I've been talking to Dennis James Sweeney. I'm David Wilk, your host. This has been Writer's Cast.
Thank you so much, David. This was awesome.